I'm Deborah J. M. Smith. This is InformingChristians.com, current events and then some. It is June 17th, Thursday, and I'm talking with Nathan Tabor. Hi, Nathan.
Hey, Deborah. Thanks for having me on your show.
Well, thank you for being here. Well, I guess you quite literally got clobbered, didn't you?
Fortunately, I didn't turn the other cheek. I did turn the other cheek in the sense of, you know, I didn't retaliate, in this situation.
You know, I noticed that. I noticed that. I mentioned that in my article that you didn't do anything back to him after he punched you. But tell my listeners and readers a little bit about yourself and the work you do.
Yeah, so I've been involved in politics pretty much all my life. My parents were lobbyists in the state of Alabama to keep creation science taught in public schools, so I've kind of grown up with that mixture of, you know, politics and Christianity go hand in hand. Through the years, I've been involved. In 2004, I ran for Congress. Unfortunately, lost. It was an open seat primary. Met my wife. I started a blog called The Conservative Voice. And I really started looking at, you know, why more Christians aren't involved in politics. And I really started looking at the number of Christians who are involved in politics who vote direct against the inspired Word of God. You know, 43% of evangelical Christians, virgin birth, death, burial, resurrection, will vote for a pro-choice, pro-gay candidate. So I built this blog up. I merged it with sold it out to townhall.com. And so over the past few years, I've just been working to help candidates understand, the Internet, social media. Then I've also been spoken at many churches about, you know, the role of Christianity in politics. I've written a book on The Beast on the East River, published by Thomas Nelson, How the United Nations is Destroying the Sovereignty of the U.S.
When did that get published?
It was published in 2006, and it did fairly well, but, you know, you got a hard, people, especially today, really don't get involved in something until it's standing right in front of them. But, you know, the Christian thing, and one thing that really inspires me, and this is kind of my drive, in all my politics. You know, Romans says, every knee shall bow and every tongue shall confess, and we will give an account for every action. The literal meaning there is every action. So whether it be in your personal life, in the comfort of your home, whether it be in your church pew, whether it be in your business cubicle, or whether it be in the booth when you vote, give an account for every action. So I would challenge your listeners, as they're listening today, if they think that they can separate their church and state and vote for a pro-choice candidate, the Bible doesn't, in the interpretation there, every account, I believe that means that you'll give an account for the blood of the innocent on your hands.
I believe that when anybody votes for a pro-abortion person, they do have blood on their hands, because they're making that vote for someone who's going to place a vote to kill the unborn. And God says that he hates the hands that shed innocent blood. And anyone who's been part of the vote system knowingly, they now have blood on their hands. They've now participated in the shedding of innocent blood. I believe in forgiveness. I believe they're, you know, but if they're not born again before they die, well, speaking as a mother of two daughters who are in the sciences, and they are Christians, I homeschooled them. I commend your parents. I think that's wonderful, and it gives me a little insight of some future for possibly my daughters that I hope that they get into this work. I think that's wonderful, and we do need to get the faith belief of Darwinism out of the public schools, or at least get our tax money out of the public schools.
Or, I mean, here's a solution. I mean, I'm okay with compromise. With, if you truly believe in the Constitution, you believe in freedom of speech. Along with the freedom of speech for Christians, also comes along the freedom of speech for Muslims and Hindu and Buddhism and, I mean, you know, every ism that exists. So I'm okay with that. With that also, in our school system, that also, if you're going to teach evolution, I personally don't agree with evolution, nor do I believe in it. But within a constitutional framework, if we're going to not be hypocrites with it in a sense, I'm okay with teaching evolution, but also teaching creation science and sending a note home with the parent and saying, classroom A has evolution, classroom B has creation science. Which would you like your child to go to?
I have said something very similar to that with the same meaning. I've also said that they could technically teach science without teaching either or. Technically, they could just teach the facts. They don't, you know, but they always tend to have to go back to what their belief is, what, you know, that they believe in Darwinism and evolution, and they do this. Of course, we know why they do this. They do that because they don't want to worship God,
right.
And they're trying to get this onto the children. But I know from homeschooling that, theoretically speaking, you could just teach the facts, and you don't have to go back to how did it all begin. Now, for Christian children, I think it's vital that they're taught by Christians myself. I don't understand. I wish I could get every born-again believer out there to have Christians teach their children or teach them themselves.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, here's one of the problems within that, in teaching this. And this is where we, as Christians, have lost the focus. And hear me through before you gasp in what I'm going to say.
Okay.
Homosexuality is not the problem. Alcoholism, drugism, thievery, all the isms are not the problem. They are simply the symptom. The problem is that people do not know God and have a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. Causes the symptom of some type of sin. And too many Christians today get focused on, oh, we've got to deal with this quote-unquote problem of alcoholism, and they come up with all these programs and how to do it, which are good programs. But until somebody has that personal relationship with Jesus Christ and can fill that void in their heart of the love and unconditional love that they're looking for, not anything else is really going to help them in a long-term situation.
I fully agree with you. That is the heart of the problem.
Which is the heart in our politics today. Why this, I'm not going to judge this gentleman, but the type of situation that I got into is we were having a simple protest about no more government bailouts. Taxpayers can't afford it. Jennifer walks into the crowd, exercises his constitutional right while we're exercising our constitutional right, but he comes at it from an angry standpoint. I just have to be standing there. I wasn't even really the leader of the group. I was just filming and helping out, and because he did not agree with my view of how things should be going, he used violence to get his point across.
Now, I saw the video of it, and what I saw was that he first tried to get you by pushing you, and that you did not respond to him pushing you, except for saying something to the meaning of someone might want to call the police here, you know, but that you did not physically respond to him physically pushing you. It wasn't until what I saw in the video was him pushing your wife that you pushed his arm off of your wife. I didn't even really see you pushing his body as much as I saw what it looked like to me, you pushing his arm to get him to not push your wife. And what good husband wouldn't do that? And it just that, and I saw that as that you threw caution to the wind for your own self at that point, because you care about your wife, and you realized, you had to have probably realized at that point that, you know, he was doing what he was doing to try and get a physical fight, because that's what he did once he got you to touch him. Was I seeing it right?
Yeah, and that was the thing, you know. I did not engage. You know, he pushed me twice. He used some foul language and told me he was going to bodily harm. I wasn't going to have anything to do with him until he pushed my wife, and then he pushed her again. And at that point, I would do it again. They've charged me with assault.
Now, that's the crazy thing here, because what I saw in that video was that you were just stopping him from pushing your wife. You did only that which was needed to stop him from physically hurting your wife. I mean, what were you supposed to do? Wait till he punched her?
Yeah, I mean, and that's the question we've asked and have not gotten a straight answer to it.
And that's all you did. You didn't do anything that was not necessary, because even when he punched you, you did not do anything back to him. Were you who was speaking to him when he was driving away? Was that your voice in the window of the car?
That was my voice. You know, I calmly went down and had a video camera, had the phone, you know, you can hear me talking to the you can hear my conversation with the police of he's here, here's his, I think we bleeped out his tag number and things like that, asking him to please stick around.
So that was you. I thought that was you. Because I'm thinking, well, that just shows how calm you were. I mean, you stayed calm, and, you know, you were not losing it at all. I mean, you were so put together. I honestly don't know if I'd have been so put together if somebody pushed someone who was under my protection, like maybe my daughters.
You will understand, and your listeners will understand. It was just pure to God. I mean, I don't know why. My 5-year-old daughter was sitting 4 feet away, and I still don't know why. I had every right to whatever I needed to do at that point to protect my family.
Well, absolutely. I mean, here's what I noticed, Nathan, was that they charged you with pushing him. So indirectly, what they're saying is that they're saying he had a right to wallop you if you pushed him first. So that just doesn't make any sense. So what are they saying? He had a right to do something to you, but you didn't have a right to even stop him from pushing your wife?
What actually happened, which makes it even more interesting, is when we got to the magistrates, they did not arrest him at the scene. They, I don't know if the word detained, or I don't know what the legal term is. He couldn't leave, but he wasn't arrested.
Okay.
I voluntarily went to the magistrate's office to swear out the warrant for his arrest. I get there, they swear out the warrant for his arrest. I'm getting ready to leave, and another magistrate comes over and pulls the magistrate to the side. Takes them another hour. They tear up the arrest warrant. They cite me with simple assault, and then they cite him with simple assault.
Amazing.
I touched him only because I was defending my wife, and
right.
They charged me with assault. So here's the sad thing, and this really weighs on my heart. I don't know this gentleman. I'm sure he's probably a very nice guy. I really think what happened to him is he, you know, fully supports President Obama. He fully supports the liberal agenda. He's fully disappointed in how Obama has carried on his office, how things have been done. The hope and change has been very little hope and very little change. And I think
the change hasn't been for the good.
Right, yeah, the change has not been for the good. And I think his emotions probably, you know, I told some friends the other day, I said, you know, it would have been much better. Especially, you know, liberals talk about being open-minded and tolerant. If this gentleman would have walked in and said, hey, I don't agree with you all. How about let's walk over across the street here to this coffee bar when you all are done and sit down and talk.
Wow, what a concept.
I would have gone and sit down and talked with him.
I would have too.
Hear what he says.
I've talked to plenty of people who oppose my views, and boy, when it's done calmly, it's amazing how far you can get.
And it's amazing sometimes how much you agree with each other.
Absolutely. But the fact is he came in there and not only was tempered, but he began physically pushing. Now, I do have to ask you this. You have him on video denying pushing your wife.
Well, what he says in there, and later in one of the videos at the end of the clip, he says that he had pushed my wife because he was trying to get off the sidewalk.
Oh, so now he does admit. So now he does admit to pushing her?
He had physical contact with my wife because he was trying to get off the sidewalk.
Oh, dear. So see, he knows. He knows that people saw it, and he knows the video shows it.
Yeah. You know, and the liberal media has even come at me and tried to say, oh, well, the video, if you stop it at frame, you know, 11 minutes and such, you hit him first. And so, well, you know, what's really the funny and interesting thing about that, in the video, shot from two different video cameras, he never says I hit him. In the statement he gave to the police, he never said I hit him. So while I appreciate you all trying to turn this story, I didn't hit him. Even in his own words, he didn't say I hit him. He said that I pushed him.
Well, and the video shows that he pushed you before he even pushed your wife.
Right. Well, they ended up dropping that angle, and no one has you know, really tried to make that stick.
Now, wasn't there Wasn't there a local paper that's normally liberal that actually sided with you, wondering why you were charged?
The Winston-Salem Journal, our local paper, it's a fairly large paper. I have a great love-hate relationship with them. I guess is how you'd say it. The editors and the journalists we're on good civil terms. We just normally have a difference of opinion. But they wrote two articles. They wrote one news article and they wrote one editorial, and they said, we just don't see why Nathan Taver would be charged with assault. And I mean, here's what I tell people that ask me now, you know, what do I think? I said, well, the thing is that I've always said, you know, love God, love your country, love your family, but if you ever go to a protest, carry 1, 2, 3, or as many cameras. Can you imagine what they would be doing to me right now if I didn't have those two video cameras?
No, I couldn't imagine. And here's the thing, you've got all those witnesses, too. Have they written out papers for you?
We have affidavits signed by many of the witnesses and have many more. You know, that will sign. Most of them have given their sworn testimony to the police. So we've covered our bases quite well there.
Well, what happens now?
So what happens now is I actually have a court case July the 7th. Between now and then, I have numerous Tea Party events and speaking places that I've invited to come in and speak with. I mean, ultimately, this is not about me. I happen to be the one that was on the end of the punch. This issue is about really coming down to is the direction of our country. We've seen Bob Etheridge, a congressman here in North Carolina, grab a student.
Boy, he sure did, didn't he?
We see the whole undermining of what's left of the little bit of moral value thread that we have in our country. Only 42 to 43% of Americans vote in a presidential election. I mean, it is time. The time is now. If we are going to save our country and turn it around, it's for evangelical Christians to get involved in the political system and actually get behind candidates who are good, God-fearing. You know, the scriptures talk about in the Old Testament, that the two qualifications of an elected official is that they should fear God and speak the truth.
Well, we need some more of them, but here's the thing. They're not wanting to get involved. One thing I found is you need money in order to run for an office. And so what I'm seeing, Nathan, is that we need to get people who do have the ability, the finances, and the know-how that could run, who are Christians, we need to get them to run. Those with money, those who are given much, much is expected. Those who have the money and have the good, solid walk with the Lord, they need to get out there and run. It is really true that it's when good men sit by and do nothing, and women, you know, right?
That is very true.
Now, I got to ask you about Joe Williams, the attorney for do you say Governor Spencer? Because that's his first name, is Governor.
Governor, I think.
Governor? Governor? Okay.
G-O-V-E-N-O-R, yes.
Okay, so Governor Spencer's lawyer, Joe Williams. Did you know that there's information on the net saying that he helped get the local DA, Doug Henderson, elected?
I have seen some of that information. I've not dug into it. The one thing I know for sure is Mr. Williams, when he released his statement about me and how this would be handled in the court system, he did not know that two video recordings existed. Since that point, he has declined interviews from local, state, even Fox and Friends. Asked him, they would pay for his flight and his hotel to come up and discuss this issue. They would not.
I'm going to read the quote that he said when he was still being interviewed. He said, quote, "We are going to deal with this in the courtroom. Mr. Tabor is going to find out that being wealthy doesn't make a difference in a courtroom," end quote. That was Attorney Joe Williams, attorney for Governor Spencer. That suggests to me that, I don't know, my first thought is that you were targeted, that it was not an accident. I don't believe it was an accident that Mr. Spencer stopped that day. And to bring up wealth, that just, I see that as trying to tamper with the possible future jury to prejudice them against you. How did you feel about that?
One or two things, I think, or maybe three. One, first is the guy who's just, was using it for publicity. Two, there was a setup. They were hoping I would start, hit back or push back or lose my cool. Or three, that there was. Just a quick search, name wise, but wealth really doesn't have. And I'm not by any means wealthy. I'm blessed. I work really hard for what I have.
Well, plus I saw the car that the gentleman, Mr. Spencer, was driving, and that looked like a pretty nice car to me. He didn't look like he was a poor man.
Yeah, no, it did not look like he was hurting for anything.
I think the attorney would like people to think that, though, that it's a rich man versus a poor man, but I got a feeling you both are probably right about in the same level, I'll bet you. And that was just very shocking, but very interesting that he's now backing off now that he knows that there's videotaping of that. That's very interesting.
Since he has heard about the videotape, he's not answered any phone calls. It's been actually funny. The local media has gone to his home, has gone to the office. They've got the recorded phone calls where it just rings and rings and rings with no answer.
Well, I think that's very interesting because Mr. Spencer had to have known. you had the video right there. If I saw it the way I think I saw it, I think one of the first things he pushed was your camera.
Well, I laughed with Fox and Friends, and they asked me about that comment. I said, I'm pretty sure I wasn't didn't have my American Express or my MasterCard or Visa on the side of my face.
Yes, I saw you. That was a good one. That was a really good one. I saw that, too. Now, there was something else here. Barack Obama, he did say, when he was running for office, that he wanted people to, and I did find the video it online, where he did tell people to go get into their neighbors' faces and argue with them. Now, I know you mentioned something in one of your interviews about Barack Obama saying something to this meaning.
There are many instances on the web, even to the latest with the oil spill of Barack Obama saying, he was going to K double S, the problem solved. I don't think that is the way that we should be looking at solving this. But Obama did say in I said 2 years. But 2 years ago, he said, you know, go to your neighbors, get in their face, argue with them, change their minds.
Yes, I mean, that talk about inciting anger, and isn't that what they're always accusing us of?
Right. They're always accusing us of being the violent ones.
Yeah, I mean, arguing, that's, you know, he's telling people to go argue with their neighbors. That's not exactly a peaceful thought. And, I can't help but agree with you that I think that Mr. Spencer took Barack Obama seriously on that. And that's the thing, is that that kind of statement that Barack Obama made, it sticks in people's minds who already have a problem of the heart. Well, was there anything else that should be added to this?
You know, the thing I would close in the end is, have people pray. Others should pray for me and my family. Pray for our country. Pray for President Obama. Pray for the Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid and others, that the Lord would work in their lives. Pray for the governor, the gentleman who, you know, got into the altercation with. And just really look, and if people aren't involved in politics, pray about getting involved in politics.
Well, Nathan, you've been a blessing. This has been very nice to speak with you. I think that my listeners and readers are going to very much enjoy listening to this, and I think that they're going to want to know more about you. I know I sure do. Now, your website that you do currently have is your name?
You just my, and that's my businesses of what I do, but if you contact me, then go to NathanTabor.com. It has my contact information. I write for various sites, like BigGovernment.com is a site. If you just go to Google and search Nathan Tabor, I write for probably 100 or so publications weekly on various topics.
Someone mentioned BigGovernment.com, and they tried to make it sound as if somehow there was something tricky going on, because apparently BigGovernment.com was involved in some way in outing, Acorn.
Bobbitt. Yeah, Acorn.
Acorn. And I when I heard that, I thought, wow, isn't that interesting how they just turned that around? Because it was a good thing that they outed Acorn, but they make it sound like it was a bad thing.
It's absolutely amazing.
In the end, good will be called evil, and evil will be called good.
Exactly.
Thank you so much, Nathan.
Thank you, and God bless. Appreciate it.
Well, God bless you, too. And that's going to wrap this up. I'm Deborah J.M. Smith of InformingChristians.com, also known as DeborahJMSmith.com. Thank you for listening.